This representative of our district here, 16, and the task force has arrived. We had meetings last night and had a good turnout, good response from the public. A lot of input was made, and as you, some of you may be well aware that we did transmit over the radio out to the public. So, without any further delay, I would like to introduce Senator Sturgalewski, who will be chairing this afternoon. And also, we have one other representative with us. I understand he's trying to figure out a way to get a caribou, so he's not here. So we'll turn to Senator Sturgalewski, and so he'll introduce the rest of the members.
Fine. Thank you very much, Joe. Representative Chekwok is on the House Resources and Judiciary Committees in the House, and also on the Administrative Regulation Review Committee. And Vern will be coming in, Representative Vern Hurlbut, and he is on the Resources Committee and also serves as Chairman of Labor and Commerce Committee. We have a number of people here from the Governor's Task Force. I'd also like to introduce them, and then members of staff for the legislature that are here. On the Governor's Task Force, we have one member missing, and that is Commissioner of Labor Ed Orbeck, was unable to go, but he's attended all task force meetings up to this date, and I'm sure will be informed. We have Commissioner of Public Safety Bill Nix on my far right. The Governor's has chosen as executive director of the task force, former Attorney General Av Gross. I don't know if you like to be former anything, but anyhow, Av is there, a person in his own right. And the Commissioner of Commerce and Economic Development, Chuck Weber. And then going to my left, Senator Rohde, Chairman of Judiciary, has a staff member here, Kevin Bruce, and my staff, Glenn Svensson. And then we have another member of the task force, Commissioner of Fish and Game, many of you know, Ron Skoog. And the governor's personal representative working with the task force is Mike Whitehead. Mike, even though I suppose some of you were with us last night, we have a few here that may have heard the radio and a few that may not have heard it. And if you don't mind, just to hear me go on a bit, I'd like to tell a little bit what we're here for and what we're not here for, and kind of say that the overriding reason we're here is really to listen to the people to this area, as opposed to come out and give you a lot of answers, although we can certainly respond to your questions. The legislature is conducting basically the hearing that was held yesterday in Dillingham, the one here today, and there'll be a hearing held in Juneau at the request of the Senate President, Jay Curtula. He asked Senator Rohde, who is chairman of the Judiciary Committee in the Senate, to basically take a look at some of the concerns that had grown out of the last year's activities in Bristol Bay from the point of view of the resource question, some of the resource that was not utilized, some of the concerns that were raised as a result of the negotiating process, some of the public safety concerns, certainly some of the questions dealing with the whole market. Is there a role of the state, of the legislature, in the generic promotion in getting marketing information? I was asked to chair the meeting. I am chairman of the Legislative Budget and Audit Committee, and so I'm here in that role. After we conduct these hearings, and of course the processors will be given a chance, obviously, to give input too, there'll be a report made to the legislature through the Senate Judiciary Committee. I have no idea at this time whether there'll be any specific action that the legislature could or should take. I can only say this, that if there's a role for the legislature, it will go through the regular legislative process. If it's a budget item, it has to go through hearings. If it's any kind of a statute change, that has to be done through a piece of legislation being introduced. So we're at the most preliminary stage now, just to listen. I would turn to Av Gross to speak on, really, on behalf of the governor's task force. This was really set up as a legislative hearing, and then it was determined it's kind of foolish to come out with a task force, in a sense, looking at a lot of the questions that we're looking at, and it, without, say, bringing, making an opportunity for really for them to come along. So it was decided that if we're all here, we can be hearing to the things that the people out here have to say. So we decided we would use a joint approach on it, and I think it worked very, very well. However, the task force may have somewhat different aims and goals, and I think it's best that you hear from Av Gross on that. Av, anything you'd like to add?
I think that our goals are basically similar. It just simply stems from the fact that last year, I think, indicated that for one reason or another, the bargaining process by which fish were sold to canneries and to anyone else was not succeeding to the point where a large number of fish were wasted. And nobody's here to assess blame for that. It's just simply that really the question of what the state can do, if anything, to prevent that from happening again. It's a publicly owned resource. The fishermen have limited entry permits, which give them the exclusive right to take them. The canneries and the processors here are protected from foreign intervention. So basically you have two sides with a monopoly on catching and selling and purchasing the fish. And they have a responsibility, I think, to utilize the resource. Last year it broke down. And the real question is there anything the state can do to help it? Without getting into the negotiating process itself, because that, I can assure you, the state is not going to do. And the governor just asked us basically to take a look at it, make some recommendations to him, and I think the Senate is, or the legislature is doing basically the same thing. Mm-hmm.
It's kind of an interesting thing in the discussions last night that, on the one hand, it seemed like we were hearing that the process, like it's going on now, has been going on for a long time. And there seemed to be, it came out, a need for more information on markets being available. And yet there was quite a bit of interchange about whose responsibility it would be to provide that information. Could it be provided in a way that there would be some real acceptance by the people that would use it as to that information being good information? And I think that's something I'd like to hear some comment on today. What if there were to be, should the marketing associations assist in getting that? Should that be their responsibility? Should they be involved financially? Is that an appropriate role for the state? Should the state start to interject itself in the process? I think those were some of the things that came to us. Anyhow, nobody signed in. We're really here to answer if you want to just ask direct questions or if you want to come up and testify. We're open to you. Who's going to be first? Always got to be first, somebody. Yes, sir.
My name is John Eckert.
John, why don't you come on up and have a... it's not really a hot seat, but I will tell you this, you're wired. So, no, it's we really do want to get this on tape. It'll help us when we make
it. Never. I don't know if it's that important or not.
Yeah.
But I feel one of the problems.
John, why don't you tell us who you're with? You're here as an individual, or?
Yes, I'm here as an individual, John Eckert. I'm an ordinary fisherman. Mm-hmm. We're a fish for Whitney Fidelco.
Mm-hmm.
I think one of the big problems, and I feel that it is one of the state's problems, and. That's probably the only way it can be corrected is through the state, is that processors in the bay here can only process approximately 25 million fish. And on a large run years, they are not going to open up them canneries for any more fish than what they can handle. That's what happened to us last year. So I feel that it's the state's position to allow foreign processors to come in at the beginning of the season on a large year. We're not going to have that problem this year because we only got 14 million fish returned. Mm-hmm. So this year there's going to be no problem. They're going to want every fish that they can get. And so I don't know what process they have used to get foreign processors in here, other than the Japanese, because this is a Japanese fishery right now. So I don't feel that we would be in any way discriminatory against the Japs by bringing other processors in to get some of the cream of the crop. Like last year, bringing them in at the end of the season, who wants to come in and get the dogs and the pinks?
Mm-hmm.
You know, they would like to get some of the cream. And so that would probably be through a legislative procedure to, and through the International Commission to alleviate some of these problems at the beginning, not at the end.
So we'd all understand that. Is there anyone here among the task force that can explain just how that process would work of bringing in the, you're talking about domestic processors?
Right. Mm-hmm. The ones that they always give us such a problem about. We can't hurt the domestic processor.
Mm-hmm.
Well, in my estimation, the domestic processor in this day and age in the last 5 years is a Japanese processor, not the American processor as an individual.
Mr. Scoop?
Well, the Board of Fisheries has laid down a series of procedures whereby foreign processors could be allowed in, and there are certain conditions that must be met, one of which would be that the domestic processors, for example, cannot handle the present run, whatever it may be. And once those various conditions are met, I don't know them, all of them offhand, but then the Commissioner of Fish and Game is allowed then to request for foreign processors to come in and relieve the situation. But as John points out, frequently that's at sort of on the moment's notice, you might say, because you don't reach this point very often until, let's say, you're in the middle of the run. And then to make a decision then that foreign processors should come in, it's very often a little late.
Mm-hmm.
So that aspect of it could very possibly be changed. And generally, the Board of Fisheries, however, and I think an awful lot of Alaskan fishermen generally are not very sympathetic toward foreign processors.
Well, you were talking in terms of domestic.
Well, the problem is with our domestic processors.
Mm-hmm.
Every time we go to fight with them over how many fish they can harvest and so forth, they seem to convince the Board of Fish, and the last time I was in Juneau, they even convinced the legislators down there that they could process 35 to 40 million fish, no sweat.
Mm-hmm.
And that is not so. It's almost an impossibility for them to do that here because they have cut down their cannery lines. They're not working at full capacity. And they're doing that in order to keep their market at a certain level. And there's no way in God's help that they are going to let us harvest 35 million fish out here without the aid of foreign processors coming in at the beginning of the season. No way. And they can't convince me any other thing. In the 20 years I've been here, I've seen it happen year after year. On the poor years, we have no problem with it. When it's a high productive year, they got us over a barrel.
Mm-hmm. Any comment to Mr. Eckert's comment? Fine. Anything else in terms of the whole process of at arriving at a price? Do you have any positive suggestions in that area?
No, other than all the propaganda they put is all on, it's all for the processor's benefit. I have seen nothing in the papers last year, and I don't see nothing coming in the papers this year giving any side of the story from the fisherman's side, what our cost is, and all that, it all seems to be a one-sided story, and it has been for the past 20 years.
Mm-hmm.
And until we break up this monopoly that they have, we're going to have the same problem year after year. There's no way out of it.
Yes, F.
John, does the situation on shore trouble you at all in the sense of, there are a lot of fishermen, obviously. There's also a lot of people working at canneries. I mean, I think what's held people back from bringing foreign processors is the concern that once you start doing that, it basically wipes out the shore-based industry.
I don't have that feeling. I really don't. Your people are still obligated to the shore canneries in one way or another. We're still obligated to, we know that is where our bread is buttered, it's, you've got to work hand in hand because the foreign processor is here this year. On a poor year, he can't afford to come in here. So he's not going to be here. You definitely have to work with the shore canneries. I understand the Labor Commission complains about that they're going to lose a lot of employment through the foreign processor and so forth. But they are set on a quota of how many fish they can take. And the shore canneries should still get their quota.
Fine. Thank you very much. Representative Chekwa?
Last year, CWF was only accepting 6,000 pounds per boat. And prior to that, it was unlimited, where the high boat fishermen were able to deliver up to 35,000 plus pounds of fish a day. And so that, to me, tells a trend that the shore-based are becoming incapable of processing
exactly
anymore, and so it puts a restriction on the local fishermen. And the other thing is, Commissioner Skoog, have we ever used that special provision that is made for foreign vessels to come in and relieve the pressure here?
It has been used a couple times, once in the southeast and once on the herring when the, I guess 79, wasn't it, when the Japanese came in and packed herring? Two times anyway. Mm-hmm.
But nothing for salmon industry here?
No.
Joe?
Yeah, are we also talking about the herring fishery at this time?
One of the things that kind of surprised me last night is we didn't hear about the herring fishery. No, and I wish that we had had some comment on it. So if you have any comments, I'd love to hear it.
I have one, and that's, we talked about our domestic processors again. And in the past, when I was over there fishing, I missed last year, my new boat got here too late, but the year before, the processors took only the fish that they wanted. The fishermen had to throw the rest overboard. And I think that is really wanton waste. That is out of the question. I can't see how, with a natural resource like that we allow that to happen. They say they can do nothing to the processors, but they sure as hell can prosecute the fishermen. They haven't, but the law says they can. Now, if we allow the Japanese in a corporate deal with the herring fishermen, they will not only take all of the fish that are brought to them, but it will also keep the price at a certain level. Over there, they were paying as low as $50 a ton, our American processors, and yet they were turning around and selling for $3,000 and $4,000 a ton. Now, if that's equitable, I don't know what we're there for.
Mm-hmm. Now, there's the law requiring, I'm digging through trying to find it and I'm not, but there's the law that requires processing. Are you bringing that into this discussion on the herring?
Well, the processing type they had before, that before it could go to a foreign buyer,
right,
and so forth, it had to have so much salt content.
Right.
And so forth. And I feel that that's inequitable.
Okay, you're getting into that. You feel that law is wrong.
I think
requires
it
requires that. Yeah,
as far as the foreign processor is concerned, we should allow him to take the best quality fish out of here that he can,
mm-hmm,
and use his own method. Mm-hmm. I don't feel that we should obligate them to even our own processors that have to sell to a foreign processor shouldn't have to go through that rigmarole to get rid of their, mm-hmm, supply. Mm-hmm. That leaves a more open market for us to get rid of more fish.
Fine. Thank you very much.
Welcome.
Appreciate it. Representative Vern Hurlburt is here, and as I pointed out a little earlier, Vern is on the Resource Committee and also chairs Labor and Commerce. We had a few people come in a little bit late, and again, we're just here in a very informal session of both members of the legislature and the task force to just really kind of find out from you how you see the state's role in the negotiating process out in this area, public safety concerns that you may have in relation to price disputes, and then into the marketing aspect. Is there a role for the state in market information or in generic promotion? And then items that are important to you that deal with the fisheries. We even got in last night to talking about infrastructure and how that can have an impact on whether you've got canneries and processors and you're able to handle the fish on shore-based facilities. So who'd like to take a crack at us, either telling us something or asking questions? We're really here to listen to you. No questions at all? With all these people here, I'll bet you can come up with a few. Yeah.
I heard the meeting on the radio.
Oh, last good.
Night, and mm-hmm, I was waiting for. I think Mr. Pink said he was going to Jed's recommendation, but I was waiting for his, after his testimony.
All right, fine. Mitch, you're a man on the hot spot there. You might just as well get up here and give us the business. No, he did make that. I'm glad you caught him. We can hold his feet to the fire today that way.
Thanks, Madam Chairman. As the last night, as I mentioned, I do have some recommendations.
And you're here on behalf of?
Here on behalf of AIFMA.
AIFMA.
Alaska Independent Fishermen's Marketing Association. The recommendations I have are not prioritized. They're just suggestions. And so I wrote up about five or six of them.
You were going to stay up all night. Now, I tell you, we'll keep you to that.
Yeah, well, I had a couple of them before that.
Okay.
The recommendations that I started out with is number one, and that is that the state absolutely do nothing while price negotiations are going on. But I would suggest this, that individual commissioners have a program to implement in case that's needed. Mm-hmm. For example, if there's safety for people, I think the safety commission should have a program to implement it during negotiations. If there's a fear of loss of the resources, I think the fisheries commissioner should have a program ready to implement. That would be one of my suggestions, that let the process of negotiation take course. Yes.
Sure. Representative
Yes. Was that under the state do nothing, but they have a plan?
That's right.
That's number
uh-huh.
one.
That's
it's
right.
All inclusive,
uh-huh.
right?
What I'm saying is that that would be the first one. You know, the state simply says, Ab Gross goes back and says, Governor, we'll just sit out, but advise the governor that the commissioner should have a program in case he is needed and called in, the safety commissioner, the fisheries commissioner should have a program to implement. Then go ahead with this program. And then the second one would be for this ad hoc committee, set the provisions for the proper negotiations, such as deadlines, mediation, arbitration, and have those who do not follow these previous determined guidelines penalized in some way or another. If we can't get the people to the negotiating table, penalize them 1 or 2 days of operation or something. But I know that this isn't very good, but it's called forced negotiations. Number three, do away with one boat, one company philosophy in the bay. Do away with one boat, one company philosophy. In other words, if a company settles the price in Bristol Bay, therefore that company should be allowed to take fish from anybody in Bristol Bay on the first-come, first-served basis. And so therefore, that, for example, if a company settles for fish, a price of fish, they settle for that price of fish, and historically only that fleet of boats fishes for that company. What I'm saying is this, if they want to settle for a small price, and I realize this is dangerous even to the fishermen, but it also gives the operators a thought. If they settle for a price, everybody in that bay could fish for that settler, that processor. But if he cannot handle that, the excess of fish that would come in, then he would have to wait until the price was properly settled in the bay. Number four, the state of Alaska will not issue any licenses to do business in Alaska, whether it be a permit, whether it be a license to do business, whether it be an operating license, would not issue any license until the complete cycle of doing business in Bristol Bay was completed.
Now, explain that.
Let me explain that. By the complete cycle, I mean that people come up here, prepare, fishermen come up here, catch the fish, sell the fish, to the market, on the market. This is what I call a cycle. The fish then goes out of the bay. That's the cycle that this bay has. If the state would not say, well, you can't, unless the price, unless we're going fishing day one, then we cannot issue license to you. Until we're assured that the fish, the resource is going to be taken care of. Okay.
I still don't understand that, yeah. Mitch. Would you try that?
Yeah, let's take an example and give some dates on it. Okay. I'm going to come in, the season's going to open on July 1st. Okay, now, why don't you give your example?
My example is that if the price is not settled in the bay,
mm-hmm.
and the fishermen are not going to produce that, therefore then they will not be allowed to have their licenses to fish that fish.
Which fishermen?
What? Huh?
Which fishermen? Suppose you have some that want to settle the price and some that don't.
Well, then you could go back to my number two. If they're ready to settle the price in Bristol Bay, and that company is ready to utilize the fish in Bristol Bay, then everybody should be able to go fishing then, right?
Well, wait a minute, but everybody hasn't got a license.
But they would have.
Okay, so as soon as one person settles,
yeah,
then everybody would get a license.
Mm-hmm.
Even though only one place had settled, and of course
that's
everybody
right.
goes fishing and plugs the cannery right away so nobody can fish.
Well, yeah.
I'm just trying to understand it.
Yeah, that's
I'm
right.
trying to throw
that's
stones. Right. I'm just trying to understand it. Okay.
All right, number five. Create a good climate for...
Just a second here. I think let's understand where we are before we go on. Yeah. Representative Herbert?
Kind of, if I may, that kind of goes hand-in-hand with number three, too, don't it?
Let me state this, that any one of these could be interchanged and it could take parts from any of them.
Another.
If you like some part in number one and compare it, I think they're compatible, that you could work any six parts of these recommendations.
Roy, I said that if one processor set the price that everybody generally agrees with,
mm-hmm.
you're saying that he should be able to run with that and everybody sell to him and he's licensed.
Mm-hmm.
So that would throw them in competition with him.
That's right. Number five.
As an example, then Icicle last year when they offered 40.
Therefore, everybody could have went fishing for Icicle.
Everyone could have gone.
Yeah.
Okay.
I mean, let's say on that everybody.
Providing, but then what if Icicle could not handle all the fish?
Well, then what's the condition?
Then he would have to. I don't think he would be allowed to continue business, because.
That's where it falls down in my mind.
Okay. I'm not saying that these are all, I'm not saying everybody's going to accept these. You ask for ideas, I'm giving you
Great.
Ideas.
No, we appreciate that.
You would have to evaluate each and every one of these.
Okay. I have a feeling the canneries wouldn't be real receptive to these ideas.
I don't think in some cases, in some of these recommendations, even the fishermen wouldn't accept them.
Mm-hmm.
But you asked me for recommendations.
No, really, really do appreciate it. You're ready for number five.
Number five. Create a good climate for good and meaningful negotiations by doing a feasible study on the financial structure of Bristol Bay. Not only taking into consideration the past trends, but starting with the historical trends in Bristol Bay.
Hmm. But on that, are you talking now, when you talk about financial trends, are you talking about getting good cost information on what it costs you to do business, your boats, your financing, or...
No, I'm just talking about trends now.
You're talking about trends of price settlement and negotiation, just to how it's really worked, sort of where it started out and where it ended up at a season, and
right.
kind of get a profile of what happened.
Number six is...
Just on that one. Does that kind of information exist? Have you tried to do that as a...
Yes, I have a lot of that information.
You have a lot of that.
You know, because they said in 1980,
mm-hmm.
we settled the June 3rd, you know. Well, you know, in 1977, 78, and 79, we settled the 27th of June. Mm-hmm. We settled the 28th of June. Mm-hmm. We settled the 28th of June in 79, mm-hmm. even on the big price. So you see, you're only talking about two or three extra days. Mm-hmm. And there are, we go back in history. In 69, we didn't settle till the 7th of, or the 5th of July. Mm-hmm. I mean, and we've averaged around the 14th or so. This is available. Mm-hmm. And from that, you can give the trend of just when are we going to settle. In 75, we settled on the 14th of June. Mm-hmm. You see? Mm-hmm. And if you take that, the settlement date, with the difference in price and the catch, there is a... There are probably some trends there.
Uh-huh.
All right? Number six, a comprehensive study of world markets for Bristol-based sockeye salmon should be conducted by an independent economic consultant who has not worked for a fisherman or for a processor. To have a positive effect on an early settlement for fish price in Bristol Bay, this should be completed by mid-April. This means that the process should be implemented and initiated as soon as possible.
I'd like to ask you a question. In your view, if that were done and carefully handled so there could be as much as possible respect for the people that do the study, what would it consist of? What would some of the elements be that you would want to have? You'd want a bottom line figure, I suppose, a range of a reasonable price. But what are some of the things you'd see that taking into account?
I would see it encompass the price, the wholesale price of all types of fish, all like half pounds, pound, frozen, and so forth. I would see the feasibility of the effect of the amount of fish that Bristol Bay is going to produce on the market in the fall. I see it encompassing the fluctuation in counter price for fish as compared to wholesale price for fish. I would, and also the percentage in which the fishermen receive for both wholesale price and counter price for fish in comparison to, I don't know, I wouldn't want to run comparison because I think this is a problem between the fishermen, the processors, and the home, and the person that buys the fish.
Questions? Okay, other suggestions?
That's my last one.
I want to break in with an apology. I did not introduce Commissioner John Williams from the Limited Entry Commission, and he's here also to respond to any questions. If the state were to get into a study like this, do you think that there would be credibility there? It'd almost have to be done by somebody outside, I suppose, the system, or how about the marketing associations getting together and doing this? What possibility is there? Seems like information like that would be very valuable in a sense for your knowing kind of what's reasonable. Why hasn't that been done before? You did do it on
We did do it last year, and we did. I've done some of it on my own. But the fact is that up until these years, that we were told that we did not know the rules and regulations of processing. We didn't know.
Understand.
We did not the other parameters that are involved on the other side of the table. And so I feel that if we can have the same information and start with the same information, then the process of negotiations will be on a level foot, mm-hmm. on the level. Mm-hmm. What I'm saying is this, that the credibility on both sides of the table must be impeccable. I have to trust the person that's sitting across from me, and he has to trust me. Mm-hmm. And I know that my integrity is impeccable. But the other side, I don't know. Mm-hmm. And I imagine they do the same thing to me. So what I'm saying is that if down the center of this table comes figures that we could look at And once we get that settled, and then we could say, well, yes, let's start then negotiating from that point. But until we say, well, last year you got $110 a case for your wholesale price. Oh, no, that's all wrong, they tell us, you see.
Okay, let me ask you a question. There have been a lot of terms called to the kind of process that goes on, and like some people say it's archaic, it's old-fashioned, it's not really collective bargaining, it's more like this or it's more like that. Is there, to your knowledge, anywhere, when you deal with, say, commodities, whether it's grains or corn or tobacco or whatever, is there a process where there's somebody that could be the kind of a person that could develop this information, that could have enough trust on the part of both the processor and the fisherman and the marketing association to come and to be that person, to develop that information, to be that outside voice that comes in? And I have some questions about the state playing that role. Is there any prototype in other kind of situations where you have owner-operator here and you're dealing with somebody who processes or does something with the product?
Right offhand, Madam Chairman, I couldn't... I'm trying to think of... I think the federal government does this in some of the dairy products.
Seems to me you're really looking for that third party that everybody can trust, or at least is a step removed, that doesn't have a stake over here or over here, that can come in with information and raise the level of kind of hard data that you're dealing with. Because you probably go through an awful lot of time just saying, well, you know, not really knowing for sure, thinking the other guy's not bringing the truth to the table. Is that correct?
That's right.
Yeah, I don't know.
And I don't know where, if you're going to have free enterprise in the Bay, I don't see any way of substituting for a negotiation.
No, I don't mean to substitute for it, but I mean to bring information to the table that could be accepted by both. I think that's what you're looking for.
We have been asking this for years.
Yeah.
Like I said the other night, last night, I said that in 1975 or 70, we asked for arbitration, binding arbitration.
But who did you ask?
The state of Alaska. We had a mediation, but that's as far as it got.
Mm-hmm.
And the fact is, history, even the history of the two times that we had state mediation, the other side of the table, the only ones that showed up was our side of the table.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, in other words, there's no force. Yeah.
Mitch, last year you had a study done, which, as I understood it, I haven't seen the study, basically recommended that, or not recommended, but at least justified accepting the original offer of 60, or not the original, but the offer of 60-40. And as I understand it, the membership at a meeting here basically, the executive board recommended it, the executive board was basically overruled. Now, what gives you faith to believe that a state-operated study is going to be given any more believability than your own study?
Well, because I think this, it would give more credence coming from the state than it come from our study. But the situation that you're talking about, Ev, was this, that the price that was turned down was 60-40, but it wasn't 60-40. You see, because it was only 50-some cents that it worked out. They had two scale prices. Let me go back to 79. In 79, we had 80 cents and $1.25, but no one company ever paid $1.25 except if it was one freezer production out here in the Bay. No company ever paid that. The average was only 89 to 90 cents, but the two parameters here were 80 and $1.25. The same thing with that report that said that they rejected a 40-60. But what happens here is that this cannery produces so much frozen fish at 40 cents, it produces so much fish it can, so then they come down here, and it worked out to about 50 cents a pound. Right. So they didn't reject 60, they rejected the workings of between those two.
Uh-huh. So you don't I'm just trying to understand. So you don't. Was it that the report wasn't given any credence, or that the report didn't support what you would have really gotten?
I don't think it was given any credence. Now, let me state this. See, I wasn't even a member of AFMA last year. And so I am talking out of my... Maybe some of the members here could do better than I. I'm just surmising what I think was proper.
I just, you know, a lot of people have suggested this study, and it seems to make very good sense. And what troubles me is, you know, here's AFMA did its own study. I grant you it wasn't the most sophisticated thing in the world, but it was nonetheless a price study. And I've been told that it basically supported the recommendation of the executive board, but the executive board was basically overruled. And I'm just, I don't want to throw a lot of state money at a study that won't be believed by anybody any more than your own study was. That's all.
Yeah, well, that's, you know, like, we've been screaming, you know, for a state study, like I said last night, that we may be dissatisfied with it, but we're going to have to live with it. And if I feel that, I feel if the governor and the state would have the study, it would have more credence to the processors. That's what I'm saying. Then what could the processors say that if here we have a state study that's going to be the basic document of our negotiations?
But how about to your own members?
Huh?
How about to your own members?
Oh, I fully realize the impact of my members if I make a mistake.
I mean, will they believe the study?
Well, will I do. I would.
So did Mulholland.
Yeah.
Yeah. Representative Hobart.
I don't know who to ask this to, Ev, or anybody. But do you have any idea what a study like this would cost?
Chuck, do you know the figures, Chuck?
Commissioner?
Jim, have you got any handle on the dollar amount? You know, it depends on how much you put into it, but you're looking something done by April 15th. What would you say, Jim? 60,000?
More than 100.
100? It would really depend on how much you build into it, but we're probably looking in the, 60 to 120. Take that as a broad range. Mm-hmm.
This is Jim Deegan with the Commerce and Economic Development here, and Commissioner Weber's staff. Any other questions of Mitch? I really appreciate it. You did some thinking, and you know, you get ideas down, and then you bat those around, and they might, you know, this is, I hope people understand that the issues here aren't solvable in 1 year, but I think the positive thing about it is people are starting to talk about it and trying to explore specifics, and I like that idea of throwing out a lot of ideas, and you might toss them all, and maybe there's one little gem in there, and it can lead to something. I think we a lot of times let anger get in the way, and then you stop something where you ought to keep talking about it. So I appreciate that that effort. Any questions you might have? Yes, Commissioner Webner, and then Mr. Gross.
Mitch, yesterday you said that really that the study selection should be approved jointly by both sides of the table. Isn't that correct? And I had a question there as to whether you felt that was possible, and I think basically you probably said yes, you thought it was. Then we get to the subject matter. Do you also think that an agreeable subject matter or listing of things to be brought forward in the study would be agreeable by both? Do you think that's an area in which there could be some fluidity, so you could get to the point where you could have a study that would tend to have validity for both sides? Do you think that's something that could be done by both sides prior to committing to the study?
I think so.
In other words, the menu would be acceptable to both.
Because, Commissioner, I feel this way, that the study itself, you could spend $200,000. If the parameters to begin that study is for both sides of the table to sit down and say, all right, we're going to let the state do this. All right. We're willing to go ahead. We can tell you right now we're willing to go ahead with the parameters that I think we could set down.
Madam Chairman, Would it be appropriate for the state to be joined in the expense by industry, do you think? Or do you think it should be all state, or should be a joint venture with some input by each financially?
No, I think it should be a joint venture. Not a joint venture. I think it should be a state venture, free and clear from any responsibility of monetary requests that comes from both sides of the table.
Mr. Gross?
I'm still trying to figure out how to make this study effective. Were you at the AFMA meeting last year when Mulholland and the group faced their room? Can I ask just the group on the site? Was anybody at that meeting last year when, you know, basically Mulholland came in with the recommendation and they had basically a mass meeting and the meeting overruled them?
Any one of you? Yes?
I wasn't at that meeting, but to answer your question, I think that study that we paid for was viable up to a certain point of last year. Like, with the information that they had, it was the price that should have been paid, say, at the end of February of last year. And from the time we came up here to go fishing, there was a lot of new information that came in as to the available stock from Japan and the frozen fish price that had, since that time, since the study was taken, that this information was brought out that, in fact, the study was correct up to a certain point, but then come the first part of June, the market completely had changed.
So it wasn't that you didn't believe it just wasn't complete.
Right. It wasn't viable past the certain date of which the study went. In other words, the study was made much too early in the year. It only went up to a certain point. It didn't go quite far enough.
Could we have your name for the record?
Anthony
Belacci. I think that you've made a very important point, though, that because in a lot of the discussion we had last evening, there seemed to be a question raised, could you ever believe anybody? And what you're saying is that apparently whatever procedure was used was perhaps a good one, but that it stopped too soon. I think that is an important point. Ms. Gross?
Hi,
Commissioner Rescue, go ahead.
Well, I was just going to say, I think you're going to have that with regard to any report you have. Like you're suggesting, a comprehensive market study completed by mid-April.
Mm-hmm.
Well, then what goes on in May and early part of June might have significant impact on the prices also. You're still faced with that problem right up till almost the time to start catching fish.
Yeah. Although I think we're talking about a little different ballgame, Commissioner, this year than we are next year. Last year, we were talking about a number price for a pound of fish. This year, in my initial introduction to negotiations, I send out contracts to the processors with a sliding scale in it. And if we're talking, here we then have two types. And if we're going to discuss the study, we're discussing that on a base price, and we're discussing the philosophy of starting at a base price with a sliding scale when the product is sold. Therefore, up until this date, everything that we use is going to be valid, because what the product's going for today, I would suggest that be our base price. What the product is going to go for when we catch the fish, that would then be the sliding scale, or that would be either up or down, but it can't go below the base price. And we've had that philosophy once before, you see. And so I think we're talking about two different ball games, because in last year we were talking about getting a price, 57 cents, 40 cents, or whatever it was, for that entire season, with no ramifications of whether that price would go up. So both of us, I would say, we're taking a chance that maybe they paid too much, maybe we got too less, little for our fish. But with a sliding scale philosophy, you have to have a start. So my parameters is that you start with the base, and the only thing you got the base is what's happened before. So you set your base price. And then, when that product is canned or produced and put on the market, then we're saying that part of that, a certain percentage of that total amount minus the base, belongs to the fishermen. So if the price goes up, it goes up. So therefore, the fishermen would then be involved in that price. And I think our whole philosophy is this, that, and I mentioned that last night again, that the fisherman is worth a certain percentage of that final price where the company gets it.
Mm-hmm. Commissioner School.
Well, a sliding scale, of course, has been proposed by various people, and there is certainly a fair amount of validity to that mm-hmm. thinking. But my understanding is a few people I've talked to, and Steve Penoyer, our director of commercial fishers, I've talked to processing fishermen too, and I gather from what you've done too, Av, that there seems to be a general resistance to that. Is that right?
There is some.
Now, last year, Icicle had this deal of 40 cents with a share in the profit. I don't know if there are any fishermen here who fish under that procedure. I'm just curious if they were satisfied with it.
Mr. Bruce, you had a question? If anybody...
May I answer
yes,
that?
Yes, go ahead.
Now, Commissioner, I would never sign a contract sharing profit with a company. Because the company has the latitude of getting a small profit. What I am saying is that we're not going to share the profit. We're going to share in the final price that was paid for that fish. There's two different... And also, I understand that they did... I don't know. I'm ignorant to what Icicle did and how they arrived, one, at their first price... And then second, how did they arrive at the percentage and the bonus that they're supposed to get?
We had a question by Mr. Bruce, and
I'm just wondering if there's an inflated market when the base price is set, and then the market sort of collapses somewhat before the Bristol Bay salmon reaches market. How does that work for the processor then? It seems like the fishermen are being covered in a way because they have a base price, and then the sliding scale. Saves the, you know, they get anything above that. I'm just wondering how that works for the processors. In the event that
the processor,
how do they recoup any money of it, say they overpaid? It seems like you're being under that plan, you're being guaranteed something, but they aren't.
That would be in the negotiation. Bruce. The fact is that in the negotiations, you're not going to negotiate a price. You're going to negotiate a percentage.
And still negotiate the initial right. base price, right?
Yeah, because you'll take what's on the market now, and okay, and then therefore you go a percentage up or a percentage down. That's what we're going to argue about. And if the company feels that they're going to be safe with a certain percentage that they're going to pay their fishermen over the period of a year, that they're not going to go below. The only thing they lose, the thing that they lose is a percentage of their take from the final price. Did that answer your question?
Commissioner?
Well, trying to get it straight in my mind, there seems to be one equation that's missing in this process of establishing a price if it's to be used to determine some base or perimeters within which you could work. And that would be the cost of producing or getting that product to the market. Not for what it's sold for, but actually the cost of the processor's cost, which you or the state is not going to be able to get. How could you take that into consideration?
To circumvent that is what you do is that you take the price. The only thing that we can do then, Commissioner, is to consider what that raw product costs the company. If they don't want to tell us, and I don't want to know, but if we know what that raw product cost them, so therefore... Then you go to the final price. In 79, you prorate the wholesale price. May I? I have some things right here.
Yeah, I wonder if we could get, is there any chance to get any fresh air in this room other than breaking a window, which we won't do with all these troopers present? There we go.
Cover it over with that lens.
Yeah. Very good. I hope it's not too complicated now, because it's...
No, it isn't. It's not. It's simple.
All right. We'll just see if it's simple enough for some of us up here, me included. Okay, Ms. Kate, go ahead.
All right. In this case here, I'm looking at this piece of information here. Here we had the raw fish price was that the fisherman that the processor paid in 79 was $57.60 for one case of salmon.
Okay.
For that case, they claim that the wholesale price was $96. So what I am saying is the difference between there is what they have to have for their selling, they have to have for their handling, and they have to have for their profits. You see, and I went back 4 years and took a comparison of this type, and I took the wholesale price, which I got out of their own National Fisheries, Fisherman Magazine, that they have the Packers report, and it comes out every March. And there they have what the larger amount of their salmon went for. I took those numbers, and then I computed it on a graph. And I took the case and how much it cost for that the poundage of fish. And then I took the percentages. This yellow one has the wholesale price. And then I went through stores, and there's a survey that had 10 major cities of the can price. And then I took the can price, the counter price. And it's surprising enough, it differs quite readily. But we're willing to take the wholesale price. But getting back to your point, that's their problem. If they settle for a price, it's like anybody else. If they settle for a price, they know that their raw product is going to cost so much. Then it's up to them through management to make a profit on what they get, what they have over the raw price. Well, I don't want to know what it cost them. I don't want to know how much profit they made. All I want to know is that the fisherman is worth so much of that fish. And I don't think that's too much to ask.
Well, that would be a negotiation between the catcher and the processor. But I'm talking about the state's involvement in trying to identify some legitimate base price from which to work. Without that equation, when you don't know the overhead, you don't know what discounts, how much that pack they discounted, you know, to get to that level, you know, to reduce their investments, you know, to reduce their interest payments and all of the other things taken into consideration, what validity does our study have?
I mean, well, let me ask you this, Commissioner. The processors up until last year had to pay a tax on their total, well, their pack to the state of Alaska, and it was predicated on a case price, a wholesale case price that was given to the state by the processors, and they were given that information, and from that information they run it through a formula, and they allowed that processor 10% for selling and handling, and then from that price, that's what was predicated, and that's how they paid the taxes on that. But as I understand, the commissioner may help me out, they don't have to pay that tax anymore.
Mm-hmm. Don't have that information.
No, they don't.
Yeah, I think
they don't.
I think that we've kept Mr. Kink up perhaps too long. I want to hear other people too, but if there are any questions so we understand the process, I think that's important. Mr. Gross and then Representative Chaplin.
If you get to a sliding scale, and I think people are willing to talk about it on both sides this year, considering the stripe you have here from year to year, is there any possibility of getting a multi-year contract? Something you might look to? Once you can establish a percentage.
Wow, there's a radical idea.
No, it isn't. In 1963, we had a two-year contract. And in 1969, we had a two-year contract. In 1970, we had a two-year contract. But let me explain this. The reason it's a radical, but the fact was that in 1971, we got only 1 cent increase. and we went back and looked at the salmon that was sold for, and the wholesale price that it went, we took it, you know where.
But if you have a slot, but if you have a percentage,
That won't happen. That's right.
That's the point. Very good.
See, because I feel that, therefore, you're not negotiating numbers. You're negotiating. If there's any place for negotiations, once we get down to the and accept numbers, the only argument that we can have is that, Jesus, I'm worth 45, I'm worth 50%. And the canners would say the opposite. You're arguing on a percentage, your value in that industry.
Representative Chaplin.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. Have you ever made any study of the other processors and fishermen, how they handle negotiations, other than the fact that people down in the Aleutian Islands or Kodiak predicate their settlement on the base of what's settling here in Bristol Bay?
No, Representative, the only thing I could think is by word of mouth. And I know, because I know very good friends that are in the Falls Pass area that fish. And I fished there for 6 years before I come to the bay. And, you know, it's a strange thing. When I was fishing Falls Pass, and they said, well, we'll settle the price, and Bristol Bay will wait for us to settle the price. Then I come up to Bristol Bay, and Falls Pass says, well, we'll settle till what Bristol Bay gets. It's just changed around since I fished there. Maybe if I move to Norway, the Norwegians will wait till we settle the price in America. I don't know.
Okay. Thank you very much. No, we appreciate very much your thoughts on this. And maybe, you know, this has kind of spurred your thinking, and you can share, you know, as you refine these things. I hope that there can be some, you know, continuing thought and dialogue. I think that's important.
And as soon as I get this typed up and all my spelling correct and everything, I'll send you a copy of it. Okay.
Appreciate that very much. Now, I don't know if those of you coming have met all the people around the table, just very quickly, both task force and legislative members, and if anybody like to come up and address the committee to ask questions or make comment, who would like to be next? Yes, why don't you come on up, and I'll just introduce again for those people that might have come in a little bit late. This Commissioner Nix on my far right, Av Gross, Commissioner of Commerce and Economic Development, Chuck Weber, Representative Chuckwalk. I'm Senator Sturgilewski, Representative Hurlburt, Kevin Bruce, who is on the staff, Senator Rohde, Glenn Spence, who is on my staff. Hi there. And, Commissioner Fish and Game, Ron Skoog, Mike Whitehead, and we have John Williams with the from the governor's office, and John Williams, Commissioner on Limited Entry Commission. Yes, sir.
My name is George Gottschalk, Sr., and I got a few things I'd like to drop down. Maybe it doesn't pertain to the direct price or how you could negotiate the price.
George, are you a fisherman representing Mr. Gottschalk yourself?
No, I'm not representing, just representing myself
just
as
yourself.
A citizen.
That's great. No, we're glad you're here. Thank you.
I'm born and raised in Alaska.
Great. I can't claim that, but 30 years is the best I can do.
The state maintains offices in Japan and Denmark. I don't know what they're doing over there. Nothing ever seems to come out of it. They said they were supposedly set up for, you know, keep the state or the people informed of the prices and the price conditions. Now, every year we come up, there's no price. We don't know what the price is. To me, actually, one of the governor's pet things, and Av Gross is directly connected to that thing, it's unacceptable to us here, mm-hmm. how it goes and the end result, okay? Two of the state, you know, they bought out the Samatov fishery. Now, what connection does the state have as a processor? Are you people sitting here as a processor being the representative of the state or what? What position are you place yourself in there?
Well, you're talking about because ARC, one of the agencies of the state.
Well, you got a separate paper corporation, but you're the lawmaker of the state. Mm-hmm. Is that a paper corporation, a subsidiary or what? Mm-hmm. At the end result, you know, like last year they bought before price negotiations, I don't know exactly correct, but the next operator to me, they passed by our house every day with their scab fish going upriver. Mm-hmm. Roughly, they bought 3 million pounds of fish between 30 and 35 cents a pound, mm-hmm. and they went bankrupt. Now, what's the policy of the state? They're going to operate a scab operation like they did last year with the state money, or what?
Well, I think that was one of the questions that was raised certainly last evening about the state in its various kinds of financing, whether it's, you know, every time you do that, and there's great demand for dollars for all kinds of investment in the fisheries, as to whether that does give undue preference to certain areas and whether you're distorting the market conditions. Now, I'll just tell you this, that ICIP is chairman of Legislative Budget and Audit, and one of the responsibilities we've been given has been in the area of loan oversight, in the area of investment policy, mostly to look at those agencies that have been created in sense to determine just how they are impacting the market. You get it from a lot of sources saying that with the state money coming in, you distort the market. That's apparently what you're saying to me, and I think it's a question we have to ask.
Well, that's I think you've got to settle that question first before you even talk here. Were you talking to the processor, or are you talking as representative of the people? Now, in the past, I can say for Adam Gross, he's cost his village corporation, I'm talking about people, you know, over $150,000 in legal fees. And we beat the man every time. Now he's sitting up here, the credibility, I have very questions of credibility. The state troopers, they've intimidated us up here during strikes. And I don't know which one is screwed. Even the state judiciary ruled against their policies on our advisory committees.
Okay, why?
But they've been enforcing all this here crap for years. I question the credibility of them guys sitting here.
Why don't you try okay, now I'm not here as a processor, and I'm sure that the other members of the legislature and the task force will say the same thing. What are the specific, what would you have the state do to make the situation out here better? What role do you see the state, what is being done now that is, let's put it in two areas. One, what is the state doing now that is causing problems in this area? Okay, that's one question. The other question is, if certain things are being done, what should the state be doing differently than they are to make it better? Could we lay those out so we've got something specific to talk to?
Okay. So your first question is one.
Okay, the first question is...
Of yours.
Yeah, mine.
I think the state should quit backing the processors and represent the people that they're duly elected to represent the people.
Okay, now when we say back the processors, what are we talking about? We should not put money into any kind of fishing loans. What shouldn't we be doing?
Well, they back the processor up here is buying 30-cent scab fish before the prices settled. Until when? How long went into July? State money. Now here the state took it over again, so you represent industry. That's what you are, processors. I don't care what you say, it's just a branch of the state. When we pay our tax, we don't pay to the, it all goes in the state general fund.
Okay, but when you're saying dollars that were put directly into let's name firms, into what firm?
Well, you got Salmonoff for one, and you got the Icicles, all, which are practically all Japanese. And I think if you go back to Attorney General, you should know that, against the Constitution. Are never examined.
Okay, so that's one area then would be the investment through Alaska Renewable Resources Corp and also some direct loans, and you object to those. Now, what
I
other
I object
areas?
To financing foreigners here, okay, to cut our throats. That's ridiculous. That's exactly what you're doing.
So I would assume then there's $100 million up before the legislature for a PAC loan, and that would allow for loaning not only to domestic but to foreign processors, and you would object then to the state making available, say, through CFAB or through the banks, the PAC loan. I'm being really serious because I want to get it down. It's easy to talk about big things, but we need to talk about the specific things. Would you object then to PAC loan financing?
I strongly object to the PAC loan financing of the foreign corporation or non-Alaskan corporation, period. This is state. This isn't federal. And they should stop acting like an international role of finance when it's adversely against their top, which is supposedly what they represent.
I might tell you, Mr. Gottschalk, that right now there is a bill before the Senate Resources Committee, and you might want to get comment in on that. As a matter of fact, does allow for financing of PAC loan for both domestic and foreign. So you might want to give input to that. Now, what other areas can we identify?
Gosh, you don't get me all.
No, we're here to learn,
I agree. He said you have legislative audit and you examine all these things. I think that thing needs to be examined very closely. Mm-hmm. And I don't think another thing like the government says, well, we don't know what the percentage of foreign-owned corporations are. It's very simple. You don't license to operate, they don't produce their, how they stand, who owns them. Mm-hmm. I don't see anything complicated about that. You know, when we file our tax, we've got to decide who we are.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Some more ex-attorney general, we should have had this thing nailed down. We should be going through this here crap redoing the people's work, or the legislative work.
Okay, let's get now to the second question. About what, you know, we're doing some things wrong. What should we be doing, if anything, that we're not doing?
Well, I think you should, one of the items, which one's, there's a state trooper. They should curtail the state troopers. I hear this violence crap. I read this. It makes me sick. I don't know which state trooper. It's a Kodiak branch. You see this?
Mm-hmm.
There's two state troopers there when I got my teeth knocked out. The guy dropped off and I rolled along into my truck. I was sitting there in my truck, and the guy, so one of the state troopers, one of the guy arrested. No, you got to go to Anchorage. Yeah, what? They seen it. And there's a known felon and a murder. That's the one they backed. And they come in here to the judge's office. They said, no, I can't. You got to get district attorney on Anchorage. Okay, this is all closing time over the weekend. What do I do? So I finally come in. The next judge comes to me and I nailed him. And he says, when you tell a state trooper to act, they better act. He says, don't you tell me. Now, that's the state troopers that are out here.
Mm-hmm.
They're absolutely protective of pro-industry, and that man they were protective, he was a known felon from North Dakota, a murderer. And he didn't have a citizen right yet. They took a 357 out of his truck and never did nothing to him. Not a thing. And I'd like to have the state troopers investigate all the Kodiak branch because they aren't very good.
Mm-hmm.
And just like this judge here or commissioner that was ousted out of here. They had to go to three judges in 6 months to get them examined. The last action I got was Judge Roy Madsen out of Kodiak. I told him, either clean up your double standard of justice or I'll buy a whole language paper, a whole one page, and put it in there. I'll sign my bloody name to it. Didn't see it, you guys. In 3 days, he was gone, retired.
Is that right?
That's a fact. The state troopers, they're not the shiniest men around the country. Another thing I'd like to see the state get back to, and this sort of refers back to our own thing, we're battling as one. Like I told Abe Gross years ago, we're battling through the courts, it costs us all these hundreds of thousands of dollars. Let's get back to the Constitution of the United States. Let's get back to the Constitution of the state of Alaska. I bet you none of you guys even know what this Constitution is. And yet you're here to hammer it out to push things. It's very simple in there, very simple. We get back to it. It's all you have to do and you wouldn't have these problems. And look at Togiak last year. You know, we started ferrying fish there in 68. We went belly up 50 grand down the tube. We had engine trouble. We didn't make the season. But look what happened last year. The residents couldn't peddle a goddamn fish. Here again, the state-backed Icicle Seafoods. I don't know how many other foreign processors they backed. They wouldn't buy any fish from their local people. And that gets back to the constitutional issue. You know, we will have be heard in your locality. We're guaranteed that in the Constitution, yet the state officially deny us that. Scrooge here, even the Alaska State Court ruled against them. I got kicked like beaver trap and they got the rule be enforced. You hear every day the rule be enforced. Poor boogers out there trying to make a living, they couldn't even peddle their herring. The rule be enforced. When I was over there, I forget what year it was now, 78 I think it was, there was no state watching any disposition of the herring. They're gobbling up and put on a foreign Japanese ship and away they went, and there are no marking the tonnage. Well, I asked the guy on the lieutenant on the big state fancy boat there. He came aboard the boat to check our license. I'm glad he didn't because we didn't have any of the time to go process getting. But he got so rattled and says, I want to go aboard and check your daily records, what this catches, what you're going aboard foreign bottom. He went out the door. I said, I'm bringing my TV reporter right with me. And we'll document everything. Gone. He never come back no more. And this is what that's what they represent, Japanese processor interest, not citizen. Well, up in Bethel, the same thing, they logged heads with them. And the court got truly wrong, didn't they? on your advisory committee.
Why don't you address the questions to the chair?
And the Bush, I think we're getting shafted by all this here crap. This is one of the first hearings we had, but the Bush is ill-representative, ill-taken care of, and everything else. You represent from the big cities, like through the oil boom. It, we're impact. Every time you turn around, you got to have impact funds. The only thing we get impacted out here with higher prices and nothing to take care of us, to take care of it. The Bush is shortchanged all the goddamn way around. And the same old tired faces I see, the expert, I don't know, the credibility after credibility, they have no credibility in my book, none. Thank you.
Don't go away here. Representative Kerber?
Yeah, I appreciate your testimony. Do you, don't you, you think that a lot of these meetings ought to be held around the Bush area, in the villages, close to the issue at hand, right?
Right. We have never even had an ADF&G here in Acton. He said, we have no facilities, they say. They held it in Soldotna, for Christ's sake. They're not. You ain't got to drive 100 miles to get there, no place to stay. Here we got, you know, we got oodles of places. We've got three hotels, four hotels, a big auditorium. In Anchorage, they stuck us in a little, where the fire marshal closed it down. That was the state's big brilliance. Pulled it off no bigger than this. The fire marshal, he took away the walls and opened it up.
Any questions or comments to Mr. Vachuk? I hope you do understand that, and I hope that you're not unhappy that we're
I'm
here.
I'm very unhappy the credibility some of the expertise that was supposedly had representing the people. Mm-hmm. And don't forget, you are on the people's employees, not sitting there like Jesus Christ.
Mm-hmm. Of course, you know, we could stay in Juneau. Where the point is, we're here.
We're staying to save the taxpayers' money. You'll see the outcome of this hearing, and then I'll decide.
Mm-hmm. Okay,
fine. Any impact or any benefit.
Fine. Well, we appreciate that comment, and we'll see that, you know, that there is a follow-up on it.
But you're hopeful.
And I will say, you know, I spent 2 years, not to change the topic, but 2 years on the Community and Regional Affairs. We traveled extensively in rural Alaska. I'm one that is concerned, and I know many of my fellow legislators are, with rural problems. So sometimes it's pretty easy to paint that brush. There's a lot of concern and a lot of interest in these things, and I think that it's going to become a major issue, the how we handle our resources, and I'm talking about the oil resources, all the rest, and I think we have to start to talk to each other, because the issues are big.
Okay, can I include also one thing, not direct? I'd also like to see, like on this here limited entry, they include the Kuskokwim area into our area here. Mm-hmm. Why should 17,000 people be up there denied a living when the same thing we're a bunch? I don't even have limited entry myself.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I quit fishing. Mm-hmm. But I think through this stuff, like through the demand for limited entry, I know there were a few years back where they checked the limited entry thing.
Mm-hmm.
Limited entries are issued to dead people in Chicago. And they brought up here and sold off here and displaced through the administration handyman. And this is fact. You can pull the thing yourself. I would recommend you guys investigate that, how where the limited entries are, very strongly. And then maybe we can get back down to an honest price. And I have to keep the state's nose out of it and keep your state troopers off our back of threatening us every time we go near a process. But you're right there. I ask for protection absolutely denied as a citizen, though. We've got to go take care of the country, protect the Japanese. I absolutely make me boil.
Representative Chaplin.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. During the process, one of the things I've learned about the legislative process is the decisions we make, or they make, are primarily based on the input we get. Unfortunately, many of the things that go through are well-painted to be attractive. And so often we do not receive the other side's view of the matter. And sometimes the legislators react in an irresponsible manner due to public pressure at times. And so basically we are the reflection of the public, believe it or not, because we are trying to base our decisions in view of the public that we are familiar with or that do give us input. And so We're hoping to open the, we submit a bill to set up a legislative information office here in Naknek, so that we hope to see more of you participate.
We, like everybody else, like Kodiak, they have their hearings very grandly. Naknek, the state contingent, they like to be in the big city, I guess, to take care of nightlife at night. You never come out here. I'd like this legislature to change the law around where the ADFJ holds their hearings in the locale to where it affects. I don't have to go out to Soldotna. We can't afford to go there. We didn't go there. The last time I was in Naknek, they brought up these phony experts, and when I questioned it, it is on record. They brought a big federal man, a man with a title that long, and he come out and nailed him down. He was lying. So he took down and they scratched his testimony. That's the credibility of these people. They have no credibility in my book.
Thank you. Commissioner? Commissioner
Scoop? I was wondering, what do you think about allowing foreign processors to come in? That's something we hear, you know, both sides of off and on, whether it's desirable or not desirable. You know, can you...
Well, at the moment, I don't care to comment on that section of it for several different reasons. I just want to pass.
Fine. I appreciate your coming, and I think you're right. We're the mirror of the public we serve, and sometimes we get a lot of different messages. But
what I told you right here, I can document facts. You don't have to do this. I can document everything I said.
Mm-hmm. I think it would be good to get a legislative information office. The more we can get of those, the more people can have access and get input to what's going on.
And nobody knows an actor here until they come up and fish, you know.
Yeah.
You don't see no state thing up out here.
A lot of it's communication. Well, I appreciate your coming out.
Can I enter in one more item in the thing,
sure,
please?
You sure can.
I'd like to have a licensing area set up down here, those people have to drive 30 miles to King Salmon to get a license. After all, here's where the fishery is. Mm-hmm. 15,000 people operate out here. You got to drive, like you, if you live in the neck, you got to drive to Fairbanks for your life. How do you feel? Here we got ridiculous. Thank you.
Fine. Thank you very much. Who's next? Yes, sir.
My name's Monty Handy. I have one of the local air taxi businesses here, and I'm a past member of the advisory board. And I was with the Department of Public Safety for a while as a fish and wildlife officer. Mm-hmm. Understanding that the basic issue here today is the fish price, I'd like to reinforce something that Mr. Gottschalk said, and that being that, in my opinion, that the price that the fishermen are paid here at the dock is directly controlled by the foreign fishing companies, the people who buy the fish in the end result. Now, the only way, in my estimation, that we're going to be able to control the price that we obtain for the fish that we catch that feeds the world, mm-hmm. is to control the foreign entities that are coming in here and dictating to us what we're going to be paid. And as a prime example, I've held a processor's intent to operate for several years, and I leased a ramp up here in Kingstown from the state. When I leased the ramp, I was given an option to renew it after 2 years. The first year I operated up there, and the second year I started gearing up so that I could buy. I was the only person living in Naknek who was buying fish at that time, actually living here 12 months of the year. And in the interim between seasons, last season the state came out here and decided they were going to change this ramp area all around up here. And 30 days before I was to have a van leave Seattle with freezers and equipment on, I was notified that I no longer had my lease on that ramp. So I reapplied for another lease. They offered to move me somewhere completely inadequate to do the job, to transport the fish out of here. So I reapplied for another lease and was denied. Now, Samatoff got my lease area, the area that I originally had, and the area that I reapplied for. And it seems to me that in the state body of government that we have here, they listen to the guy with the most money and who has the most people to go and yell the most, you know. And I think that one thing that would help in this price negotiation is to get the local people, to get some local people in here buying fish and taking care of it. And as long as we're able to tell one local person or a half a dozen, or if everybody in this room wanted to buy fish and sell them, if the foreign companies have enough power to persuade the people who control the areas that you need to transport your fish or buy your fish, if they can persuade those people to give them that option rather than the little guy, we're always going to be controlled by them. And the thing that I wanted to reinforce was that I feel that the state should limit the amount of funds that they make available to foreign entities or even partially owned foreign entities, that we have some control on our industry.
Mr. Haney, that's why I was not trying to zero in on Mr. Gottschalk here, but I was really trying to get underneath of that. You know, that's one of the major issues. I'm kind of departing a little bit from the format of what's going on. We've got, even from the most conservative of businessmen, we're getting tremendous pressures as a legislature to invest in all kinds of things, whether it's hydroelectric or agriculture or fishing or what. There were tremendous pressures in the last legislature, last 2 years, to assist in companies that were having some problems, and there was a great fear that we would lose jobs if we didn't do it, push to get into CFAB and some of the other. Now, what you're telling me is that is making it harder then for the operator out here. So, I mean, you know, I'm listening to you. There's a pressure on the one hand to well, assist and to keep those companies afloat and those jobs there, to make it so that you can go out and buy various kinds of capital equipment. What it seems to me is there's and there was quite a bit of discussion last night, and I'll throw this at you, at the Dillingham meeting, of the need for more assistance in getting, you know, the docks, spaces, small boat harbors, et cetera, et cetera. That's the kind of thing you're talking about, is availability to some of those kinds of services so you can actually operate out here. That's what you're telling us, isn't it?
That's right. The only people that can operate out here on a small scale, mm-hmm, are the people that have enough political clout to contact the right legislatures to get their lease application approved through a state agency, and it shouldn't work that
okay,
way.
Okay, tell me, just out of my interest on that, what agency handled the leasing on what you were talking about?
The Department of Transportation.
Yeah, I want to expand on that, because I've heard other complaints similar to this, not only here, but Kotzebue, Bethel, other places where that's involved, where the big entities seem to have the riding power on these leases.
That's correct. And
I certainly think that ought to be investigated. I'm close to that issue, and I can appreciate that. I think we ought to give the smaller man a bigger benefit on those type of things myself.
The crux of what I'm saying is that if you want to just say, rather than, I don't like to pin it down and say Japanese or Korean or Russian, but you take, as long as you're going to help the foreign entities come in here and buy our fish, they're going to control the price that we get paid indirectly through the cannery. And as long as we continue, we're financing our own death. Mm-hmm. By giving them money to come in here and tell us how much they're going to pay us for what we're providing them with. And the whole thing that I'm getting at is that as long as the foreign companies are given these great big loans in order to buy their pack or put in their plant or whatever, the fisherman is the one who's going to take it in the shorts, because they're going to control the price of the fish. And no amount of negotiation or sliding scale or anything else is going to change the fact that they're telling us how much money we're going to get paid for that fish. So the only way you control that is to limit or reduce the amount of money that we make available to them to operate. That's going to open the door for native organizations to start their own cannery and do their own marketing. It's going to open the door for the fishing various fishing organizations to start their own thing.
Yeah, I hope, just like with Mr. King's testimony and some of the kind of brainstorming that he's